You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
You're listening to another thrilling episode of the Toilet of Hell Radio Show, the only podcast hosted by at least one guy without a hangover. I'm Joe Thrashenkill. With me, I've got 365 Days of Horror. Say hi.
Fresh and ready. Fresh and ready.
And your boy, Brenocide. Breno, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You don't want to say
I was waiting for the how you doing, fellas, and yeah, I am very hungover, so.
Yeah, I'm
God damn it.
I don't really, I mean, I drink way too much all the time, but I don't really drink to super excess anymore. But I did yesterday, and despite, you know, following up every drink with a glass of water, it was for naught. I am dead.
Yeah, the reason I just yelled God damn it is because I'm getting texts. Usually I'm on it, and I'm putting my do not disturb mode on for the show, but yeah, I've had a few last night. It was fun.
So what's to excess for both of you?
I have a set number of drinks that I can have in a night without being number one fucked up and number two like super hungover. That number is four. If I exceed four drinks, I am doomed.
That's pretty much it. It's four, and I'm a very big guy. But even still, if I have more than four, I really don't feel comfortable getting in a car. Number one, and number two, not going to sleep without lots and lots of water.
Yeah, I drank tons of water. Tons of water. It was just, I drank tons of alcohol too.
I don't think the dehydration is really all that's to it. You know, I think it's just the amount of poison that your liver has to process in and of itself is just.
That was my first thought when I got up at 6 to take the dogs for a walk. It was like, oh yeah, I poisoned myself.
I'm killing myself slowly.
Yeah, just having that great existential crisis while you walk for 45 minutes with a hangover, like, what am I doing with my life? Why do I do this? Where am I? What do I hope to achieve? Is this what I saw myself as when I was a child, like what I would be as an adult? So, good morning. Good morning, guys.
And you're going to do it all again next week.
Yeah, probably. Right. Yeah.
Probably some of the best advice I ever got was just don't drink. And, you know, it sounds so simple at first, but the more you get into it, the more you realize that it's such a great idea. Number one, it's very expensive. You spend so much money, especially if you want to go out to drink with friends or something at a bar. Forget it. You're going to spend $60 just to have a few sips of some shit. Go ahead.
No. You go off, King. I'll chime in later.
That's right. And then number two, what me and Joe are saying, you're killing yourself. You're waking up in the morning feeling god awful, just breaking down your body in every conceivable way and just taking years off your life. And number three, you do not make good decisions while under the influence.
This is true. These are all true things.
So it's never a good idea. But you want to kick back, relax. I get it. It's still fun.
Did you guys see the thread in the Toilet of Hell social club about dudes showing the receipts from Steam, the PC game platform? People were looking at the historic data for how much money they had spent on Steam, like, since they downloaded it.
Oh, yeah, no. Oh my god. I was horrified.
Same. And then I realized, like, you know, the one guy had spent $8,000 on Steam games, and I was like, well, I've probably spent at least that much on alcohol over the last 10 years, so maybe I need to shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Anytime I buy a video game for myself, and honestly, I struggle because of Steam. I struggle to spend over $10 on any video game. I just wait a couple years until the hype dies down, and I can play any AAA game I want to on a Steam sale for like, god, $10-$15, you know. And I struggle to do it because I'm like, you know, $10, that could buy me a nice beer out there somewhere. So, you know, it's just like, well, do I want to go into this multi-hour long masterpiece that very many people worked very hard for and, you know, challenge myself and have fun? Or do I want to chug something that will give me heartburn and a headache?
Yeah. I think I've only bought one game on Steam, and I maybe spent $5 on it and put several hundred hours into it. So I think it was a good investment.
Yeah.
Was that the Dream Theater game?
Yeah, yeah, that's the one. No, it was the Binding of Isaac. If you guys haven't played it,
it's fun as shit.
Possibly don't, because it's just, it's a trap. Like, it operates kind of like a slot machine, so that you're constantly trying and trying and trying to get a different result.
During this specific Steam sale, my wife does not play any video games, but she said, you can, you know, if you can find me something like Diablo and like Farmville, then go ahead and get me that. And so Stardew Valley is exactly that. So
I was going to suggest that.
So I got her that for like $15, and she was on it for hours yesterday, just having the time of her life, regardless of what she tells me now.
That rules. I picked up a Nintendo Switch, and I've just played that Mario game on it, but my lady is interested in, if there's a Pokemon game coming out for it, she wants to give it a whirl.
Pokemon?
Yeah. I missed the boat on Pokemon entirely, so...
What are you, a 62-year-old person, Pokemon?
The Pokemans.
The Pokemans.
What is it? It's like the new superhero all the kids is into, the Pokemon. Bill Cosby over here.
No, please do not compare me to Bill Cosby.
Don't talk like him, and we won't.
Whatever, man. Have a puddin' poppin' smile. So I figure, actually, on the tip of alcohol, Jordan, you were telling us, you're telling me a story before Breno signed on. What did you go check out this week?
Yeah, last week I went to see our good friends in Municipal Waste play a live concert. It was a lot of fun. And they played a direct support was Gangrene. And if people remember them, they had a brief blip of popularity in like the early 90s involving like skateboard and beer was their like type of theme.
And yeah, they have a bunch of songs specifically about booze, which, you know, I think I hear a rumor that Municipal Waste might also have a couple of songs about booze.
Something like that.
Just a few.
So you, as a straight-edge person, were you, like, shouting along to the lyrics of Alcohol?
I mean, I'll chant along to Municipal Waste is gonna fuck you up and all that. You know, it doesn't make a difference to me. I haven't had any alcohol in 15-plus years. I'm used to being around people who drink. I'm used to being around people who love to drink, and it's like their only hobby, and it's the one thing that makes them special. But, you know, whatever. It's fine. I can still have fun. Just not going to go spend $8 on a beer at the bar. It's just not for me.
Yeah, not when there's cocaine. So what, I don't know, was Gangrene any good? Because, I mean, those guys getting up there in years, right?
Yeah, it was kind of funny because they're like typical Boston punks, but they're in their like late 40s, maybe 50s, still singing songs about the skater die and drinking Budweiser, and I think they had some technical issues, instrument issues, and someone got hurt during their set, and like, this is maybe one of the few shows I've ever been to where like everything has stopped. The band stopped playing, the crowd stopped, everyone backed up. I think the drummer from Gangrene is an EMT, and he like rushed to help this guy. He eventually got up, but it was kind of like weird to continue the rest of the show after that happened.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Speaking of typical Boston punks, shout out to Scott Baker's kid, AJ Baker, for getting tried for sexual assault for something he did on a plane over the weekend.
Wait, what? Oh, Charlie Baker.
Charlie Baker? Oh, Scott Baker. Whatever.
I don't even live in your state.
Who are these people?
I guess I just don't really either.
Here, I will explain. Charlie Baker is the governor from Massachusetts. His son just got in trouble on a plane, like, in the past couple days. It hasn't exactly been clear what happened, but now we're up to speed.
Wait, okay, so I Googled his name. The top news story is, sources say Governor Charlie Baker's son has been accused of sexual assault on a flight. So this guy was just, like, assaulting a person, like, 10,000 feet in the air? Like,
it happens a lot.
Really?
I can assume.
Yeah.
Oh, my dad's the governor. Don't touch your boob.
Yeah, say it. Chowder.
Chaudia. But yeah, you know, women fall asleep on planes and there are creepy guys next to them do things, or he was jerking off on a plane. I don't know yet. I don't know the details, but it happens more than we know.
Cool. I fucking hate flying, so that just adds an extra wrinkle to it that I never considered, that you could be trapped next to a fucking sex pervert, you know? Like
trapped.
Trapped. You're in a fucking tin can, yeah. Did you guys see the picture that went around on Twitter of the guy just like pissing like on the back of the seat on the flight?
Yep.
Fucking flying's terrible, man. Getting back to Gangrene. Did you say there was another band on the bill?
There was also Savage Master opened.
Tight.
Yeah, they were good. You know, I've listened to them, just their CDs, and it's been okay, but I think live it worked out for me more. I think it's better in a live setting, kind of seeing them. They all wear hoods and the vocalist is kind of dressed up in a cape and really working the crowd, so it was good. It was funny, one of their guitarists with the hood on had his glasses on like over it. I totally get that, but it was just kind of a funny visual. And Drop Dead also played, of all bands.
Drop Dead is such a funny addition to that bill. I saw Drop Dead open up for Municipal Waste once too, or they went on after Municipal Waste, I think. And I was just like standing there hammered, chain smoking, the vocalist of Drop Dead went on a tirade about something about how there's animal testing on cigarettes or something, and so everybody needs to throw that shit out. And I was like, huh. I'm so confused right now. I don't know exactly what he was trying to say other than, hey, dude, stop smoking.
Yeah, that's vocalist Bob Otis is well known for, you know, his political stances and preaching about, you know, animal testing and veganism, stuff like that. So there's plenty of that going on, and it's a hometown show for them. So most people were receptive. One person in the back was yelling, but everyone was kind of ignoring him. And they also had some tables set up for like vegan lifestyle and stuff like that. And they actually had vegan cake that they were handing out to people.
All right. That's pretty cool.
It's cool. I'm shocked no one threw cake. Shocked, especially at a Municipal Waste show.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the Boston crowd.
Yes, it was a good show overall. A little weird, but you know, a good time had by all.
So Slayer played their quote unquote final show here Thursday night, and I went and saw Guided by Voices instead because I've seen Slayer twice and Guided by Voices twice, and I was like, yep, time to make it three times for Guided by Voices. The vocalist of Guided by Voices, if you guys are unfamiliar, like this he was a school teacher who decided to become a rock star at some point in the mid 80s when he was like 35 years old. So he's well up in years, and comes out on stage, you know, with a cooler and just, you know, by conservative estimates, went through 15 beers during his 50-song set. It was impressive.
Guy's my hero.
He's a lot of fun.
Still got a few years left before I become a rock star and drink 15 beers a night.
When you're like 65 years old.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I guess at that point it doesn't matter.
I was like, how, because this set was 2.5 hours long. I'm like, how are you not pissing your pants right now?
Did he leave the stage at any point?
Yeah, they left stage like at 2 hours in so they could come back and do an encore, you know? But
so maybe someone had a bucket on the side of the stage.
That's the thing. I don't think he was gone for long enough to like get all the urine out.
That's the thing, too, is just I never understood dudes who can just put away that much liquor just from a liquid standpoint alone.
Yeah.
Like if you drank 15 waters, you know, you'd be cross-legged in 10 minutes. I don't get it.
I also saw Primitive Man this week. If you guys go see Primitive Man, please do yourself a favor and wear earplugs.
Yeah.
It was extremely loud. Anyway, did you see any shows this week, Bruno?
Oh, man, I don't... the more I hear you guys talk, the more I realize I just don't go to fucking shows anymore. Like, I miss it. I'm listening to you guys talk about it. It's putting me in the mood. I want to go see some shows. So I probably just should. I'm just so lazy, especially after work. Like, if something's coming up on a... Which it often does these days. Even some of the biggest bands will play on, like, a Thursday night or something random. I'm useless after work. I can't go and stand somewhere and, you know, try not to hit people for 6 hours anywhere.
I think it's I don't know. I go through stages where I go through a lot and then I gotta chill out for a bit. So maybe you're just in a downward slope right now. It'll come back up again anytime now.
Yeah, it was like the biggest pass up I did recently was Judas Priest was playing in the Palladium probably like a few months ago when they were on their quote unquote final tour, maybe, and this is like their seventh final tour. So good on you for missing Slayer, because that's a bunch of bullshit. Because this is what bands do. They say, this is it, this is the end, and then they just don't. They just come right back when they need some money, some bills to pay in a couple of years.
I saw my buddy last night. He went to the Slayer show. He told me that the day of the show, tickets were $6 on StubHub.
Really?
Yeah. So I don't think that Slayer made their nut the way that they thought they would on this quote-unquote final tour.
Seriously, I feel like I was looking at local stuff and it was like over $100. Like they were playing Mohegan Sun or some fucking casino arena.
I think they played the smaller venues that they played sold out, but like they played the fucking place where Taylor Swift performs, like here in town. So like way too big of a venue.
Oh boy.
Well, they also tour with the same bands. Like how many times can Slayer play with Lamb of God and Behemoth and Testament and Anthrax? We've seen it before. Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Backed wholeheartedly. No interest in seeing.
Take a new band out at least. Give someone the rub. Give them a little something.
None of members of Slayer have heard of a recent band in the last 15 years.
No. I disagree, because Kerry King did a guest spot for Sum 41, so he knows who they are.
Right. So Sum 41 should open for Slayer.
That's what they deserve. That's what Slayer deserves.
Slayer deserves. Right. Yeah, there's only so many times I can go and hear a group of guys do a shitty job playing Rain and Blood. So I just, you know, it's not worth $100+ for a, you know, ground floor ticket.
Yeah. Yep. And it's just, it's expectations too. Like the same thing that's going on with NoFX now, trying to claim that all their shows are canceled when they're playing venues that are too big for them and they're not selling well.
Yeah, that's the thing. So again, another conversation in the Toil of Hell Social Club. If you're a listener of the show and you're not a member of that, you should probably join, because it's a lot of fun. But you had posted in the group that Fat Mike was basically claiming that they had been quote unquote banned from performing across the United States.
Oh yeah, right.
Which is again a load of fucking bullshit. What happened was, I think that they did have a couple of dates canceled, but for the most part, like, they were just not selling enough tickets. Again, NoFX tried to do their Punkin' Drublick Fest at the same venue where Slayer was selling $6 tickets to their show, because they couldn't sell out. Slayer is, you know, unequivocally a much bigger band than NoFX. Like, even though there's more mall punks out there, they're all, you know, in their 40s and believe Blue Lives Matter now anyway.
Sure. Do you think the lack of ticket sales had anything to do with his comments, or do you think it was what he said where the venues refused to let him do his thing?
I think that there was definitely a depressive effect on ticket sales, like bumming out your suburban fan base that loves Cops.
Right.
They want to hug and kiss Cops all the time. So if you make a joke about you know, the Vegas shooting, I guess that might keep them from going out.
You know, venues wouldn't cancel a show if you're making a ton of money for them.
Yep.
Sure.
So but yeah, somebody in the group, Carl, said that it was sold out where he was, and I guess it was like Everett, Washington or something like that. But again, at a much smaller venue. So, I don't know, man. Quit trying to book the fucking arenas, dude.
Yeah, book the 500-person club and sell it out. That's fine.
Yeah.
Right. Book a dive. Make some cash.
Stay strapped. Get money. That's my advice to all bands out there. You know, I think that we would be... I don't know, remiss to at least talk about this a bit, but we got the news late Friday night that Vinnie Paul had sadly died at the age of, I believe, what was it, 54?
54, yeah.
Yeah. Which is sad and surprising. I guess I kind of took it for granted. I thought that he would, you know, beefing with Phil Anselmo and playing drums in Hell Yeah Forever. But I don't know what happened. I would assume that it has something to do with living a really rough lifestyle for most of your life. But I don't know.
The latest report said that he died in his sleep. I don't know. They didn't. They're still doing some sort of. They're just still doing the autopsy,
yeah.
So they don't actually know the cause of death yet. But they just, you know, found him this morning in his, or that morning in his bed, dead. So that's. I wonder. It's probably just mixing like fucking Ambien with alcohol, like every other person who makes over $1 million and is white dies. It's just unfortunate.
Unfortunately, but. Yeah. Like. Opiates and alcohol are a bad, bad idea. Don't combine them. People die really easily from that shit. But that is terribly, it is terribly sad. You know, his brother being murdered on stage, like, you know, is it like 14 years ago, 15 years ago?
Yeah, it's getting up there.
It's just tragic end for the Abbott brothers. And it is a little, I don't know, it's just weird for me to, you know, because we talked about this all the time, like, Pantera was, like, my favorite band when I was a kid. It's yeah. Weird to see the dudes that you loved as a kid die. You know, it's a weird, sobering, aging thing. And then, like, combined with the news that Big Van Vader died this week as well, like, it's, you know, you're childhood Saturday morning, like, completely wiped out.
Yeah, right. Jesus. I don't know if Pantera really had anything to do with my Saturday morning as a child, but I don't know. Maybe they did a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles episode here or there. I don't remember.
I don't know what to make of it. Brenna, what did you see the thing about Vader? Like, do you know what happened?
I didn't see whatsoever happened with Vader, actually. I heard
he's had heart issues for the past couple of years, and I believe
pneumonia, right?
Pneumonia, yeah, that was it.
All right.
To his credit, though, he made it to his 60s, which is incredibly impressive for anyone from that era of professional wrestling.
Oh yeah.
Deadspin used to do a feature called Dead Wrestler of the Week. That I don't know if you guys have ever read it, but I highly recommend like checking out the archives of it, because number one, it's incredible writing. Whoever the writer was, I think he called himself like the Masked Man. And number two, it is incredibly sobering to see the rough lives that these guys were living, and like how complicit the WWE was in like feeding them drugs. So, I mean, it was surprising for some of these people to make it to 40.
Yeah. You know, go ahead. Sorry.
With wrestling, they're beating themselves up every night, sometimes multiple times in a day, whereas you compare it to just like a rock lifestyle of playing drums for an hour and then partying all day. You know, it is a fair comparison, but, you know, different types of lifestyle, I suppose.
Yeah, but I mean, like, with those 80s and 90s wrestlers, though, like, all of the steroids and, like, hormone treatments and shit like that, combined with, like, incessant painkiller usage, like, just, you know, wreaks havoc on, like, you know, your heart, for one. So, yeah, part of it was, like, survival mechanisms, and part of it was, like, yeah, there was a lot of partying with those dudes, too.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
It's only gotten worse. I mean, you think about how many shows WWE does now, and how they're trying to kind of expand their brand to be a bit more worldwide. So now they're going to places like, they just did that thing in Saudi Arabia, and now they're going to be doing something in Australia and do more stuff in the UK. These guys just like live in airports, and then they live in motels, and they're all just, you know, bored and stressed and not getting enough sleep and jet lagged, and then they have to go into the ring and like destroy their bodies entertaining people, I'm sure like cocaine becomes a necessity at a certain point living this sort of fucking life.
Yeah, and they're all independent contractors because the WWE refuses to, you know, run itself like a respectable business.
Well, why should they? They're carnies, you know, at the base of it, and Vince McMahon's just gonna bleed them all dry. And there's when they're done, there's 10 more people to take their place.
Yeah, true.
I remember reading that the Undertaker, like, he would drive himself to every show, like in his. Like as an Eldorado or something like that, and just a man that big, just like scrunched into a car, spending that long, like driving, and then like in the gym working out, and then, you know, beating yourself up in the ring, and then taking who knows whatever the hell you need to like just make it to the next day. I can't believe that he's still alive.
I can't believe he's still wrestling. I can't see that fucking guy limp down the runway one more time. For another big WrestleMania appearance or something. Just leave the poor guy alone. I'm sure he's paid his money.
Mick Foley, you see him now, he can barely walk.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, he was, you know, of course, you know, notorious for like destroying himself in ways that other people wouldn't. Like the fucking Hell in the Cell thing, like that would just shred your knees for life.
Oh yeah. Do you guys remember the documentary? I think it was Beyond the Mat.
Yeah.
That was in the 90s. And in that documentary, it showed the, at the time, still very old Terry Funk and going to the doctor, zero cartilage left in his knees whatsoever, total agony to move at all. And so he promised everybody in that time that he was wrestling his last match at some, I don't know, some sort of bingo hall one-off show or something. And then, of course, he's just been wrestling ever since. So, like, back then, his body was all the way done, and he's just been continuously pushing it to keep making that buck, keep putting himself out there. It's just insanity.
Yeah, I will say that the number of wrestling deaths have gone down from the height of 10 years ago, whereas in the world of music and metal, it's still happening and still kind of piling up, and we're even seeing some of the ongoing problems now with the faceless.
Yeah, man. Again, going back to opiates and how they're no fucking good. I mean, the rumors have been out there for a while. I think it's pretty well like established that allegedly. Nobody listens to this show. Nobody's going to sue us.
No,
allegedly, Keen has a big problem with heroin and/or other opiates. I mean, the way that addiction typically works in this country is that you get painkillers for various reasons. You get addicted to them. You can no longer get your prescription of painkillers, and then you have to get something else. Most of the time, it's heroin.
So, didn't Michael Keen admit to that, though? Like, after he was called out online for it, he kind of copped to having that sort of a problem. So it's not like an alleged sort of thing. Like, he's admitted to that.
If he did, I missed it. So just to be on the safe side. but, I mean, the Faceless has had just an absurd amount of turnover as a band, you know, for forever now. And
I just counted how many members on Wikipedia. We're getting close to 40.
Wow.
Holy shit.
And you've had some incredibly talented people in and out of the band. And it seems like, I mean, just off the top of my head, I'm thinking like Evan Brewer, Ken Surruption, however you pronounce that name. And it seems like if he could just keep it together, he could have like just a tremendous band. But as we're seeing recently, like shows are not going off as planned or getting canceled at the last minute. People are leaving the band, you know, leaving him high and dry, like right before a tour. It's a real, real shit show, man. And it seems to be all related to Michael's own instability and possibly his, you know, addictions. So it seems to me, hot take here, that the dude could probably use some help and could probably use fewer enablers telling him to keep doing this.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. So what I was referring to was he had, before the name of heroin was dropped, Michael Keen had admitted that he was a recovering drug addict. The quote is, "I obviously was in a pretty dark place when I was writing lyrics. I am a recovering drug addict, and a lot of the lyrics are about drugs. I had a few rough years, and writing lyrics was a very cathartic process, I think. So he's claimed that he was a recovering drug addict, but you know how that goes. He was probably relapsed up and down all over the board, so allegedly.
Yeah, and that's the thing with addiction too. Like, relapse happens, and it's just a fact of it. But it seems like he has more than this standard number of relapses here on this. It's, you know, it's a thing.
I'm just surprised that people still want to work with him. Like, you know how the story ends. Why is it going to be different because you're the new guitarist or you're the new drummer?
I don't know. I guess it would be for somebody that maybe doesn't have as much prominence in the scene. Like, you know, this is a quick way to building your own credibility, as like, hey, I played in the Faceless, I can play in your band. I don't know.
I'm member number 36 in the Faceless.
Every member of the scene has played in the Faceless now. So, but it's interesting you say enabling, and I think that musicians in the scene have a responsibility not to fucking work with this guy. To kind of show him that, you know, he shouldn't have people propping him up to kind of continue doing this self-destructive behavior. I think the sooner that the Faceless is like dead and buried and not playing shows and not out and about and not in this like party rock star lifestyle, the sooner he can get some real help and then maybe at some point come back and make it work for himself. But I don't think he's at that point yet. Wasn't he late for a show recently? Like very late.
Yeah, that was a California
Death Fest.
They were supposed to perform Monotheus in its entirety, and they got about half of it, maybe.
Wow.
And somebody posted to Instagram like a clip of Keane just completely fucking up a solo, and you know, that happens. That's unfortunate, but it seemed like it was a real disaster. I also saw that like the tour manager had claimed that their van had died, so getting it fixed last minute was what made them late. I don't know. I saw Godless, the Chuck and Godless podcast that they stopped doing a little while ago, was taking issue with some of the reporting on this thing. And that he thought it was inappropriate to basically denigrate the band for failing to meet expectations and for basically fans being mad that the band had fucked up so clearly. I kind of take umbrage with that because I think it's important to be sensitive to, you know, the addiction problem, the substance problem that a person may or may not have. But also, you know, if you're fucking up, dude, you need to be aware of it. Perfectly fine for fans to, you know, have paid their money and traveled to go see you, be mad if you're too fucked up to perform.
Right. Fans at the end of it are paying customers and you guys are a business. So if you don't meet your end of the deal and don't, you know, offer the clear trade for goods and services you were supposed to, then customers have a right to be upset.
Yeah, so, I hate to make it like a transactional nature like this, but like that's what it is.
Yeah. The moment you put money into music, that's what it is.
Like, you got to be sensitive to a person struggling with their own demons, but goddamn, dude, you also need to get your shit together.
Right. And now people aren't going to go to his shows, or less people are going to go to his shows. You know, he's going to have this effect of people having enough with it. So they're all going to move on and they're going to take their money elsewhere. And eventually he's going to ruin himself if he doesn't shape up anyway. So he might as well be told about it.
Yeah, I think it brings up an interesting question that we as music fans sometimes need to ask ourselves. What is our responsibility as a fan of these bands? Like, if someone loves the Faceless, should they not go and see them because this guy is clearly having problems?
That's a good question, man. I think that because there is no good answer to this. Like, dude needs money to live, but
right,
clearly, like, he can't make whatever commitment he needs to make right now. I don't know. Have you guys ever dealt personally with somebody that had a bad addiction?
No.
It is one of the most frustrating things, I think, on earth. Because it's a person you care about, you want to see them better, and you're giving your heart and soul to, like, try to help this person make a positive change, and they just fucking can't, you know? Yeah. So, like, struggling with, you know, having to deal with this person going through relapses and all this shit, like, it's incredibly challenging, and there's no easy way to go about it, going about this like, oh, it's okay, you're just going through these demons, like, it's more complicated than that. It is more frustrating than that, because it just affects everyone around them in such a negative way.
Yeah, addiction, it pretty much runs your entire psyche. People who would normally be good, reasonable people will do things to meet the needs of that addiction that, you know, they normally would never even think of doing. They'll steal, they'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll do everything they possibly have to do to get that fix. And it very easily destroys families. It does it all the time, kills people, you know. So one of the only things you can do to help these people sometimes is to do everything you can to not give them the safety nets to allow it to continue. And so it's an interesting concept Jordan bring up. Are we kind of doing that as fans by funneling money into this guy's endeavor? Like, are we supporting his habits? And it's a good question, because we people who buy faceless tickets, buy faceless merch, buy faceless music because, hey, those Willy Diddlies, those are sweet, you know. They very well could be.
And not to be grim about it too, but if they come to your town and you're a fan, you have in the back of your head, this might be the last time I get to ever see them.
Yeah, that, I had that same thought.
That's a very good point.
The last time Anal Cunt came to town.
I'm sure.
Yeah, we all know how that went. Poorly. But I think it's another thing too that not everyone can overcome addiction. Some people, it is just too great of a challenge. And in doing so, like, they never actually... The idea with, like, an addict is that they'll reach a rock bottom and realize that they need to make a change in their own life or they're doomed. Some people never reach that rock bottom. They just...
No, the bottom gets lower and lower.
It gets lower and lower, and then they're dead. That's, like... That's how it works, and it is terribly sad. But I think there's probably a handful of people out there trying to, like, figure out how to work with addicts and how to make it better. But sometimes there just isn't a way. So I don't know. I hope this dude gets his shit together. I really do. But until he hits that personal bottom, I don't know how he can.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't want to sound cynical here, but I'm sure it's going to come out. I'm sure drugs had some involvement with the unfortunate sudden demise of Vinnie Paul. I'm sure he did something that wasn't so responsible with his health to end up that way. Or I could come out an asshole and it was like sleep apnea or something. I don't know. But I guess we'll find out in the next few days when they come back with any sort of toxicology to report what might have happened.
I mean, you might not be out of turn with the whole possible substance thing. I mean, part of the Abbott brothers, like, whole persona was that they were, you know, big partiers and drinkers. Like, they had a strip club that they bought together in Dallas. Like, they had their own drink.
Yeah, they had drinks named after them.
I remember I forgot who it was that posted it, but it was like family photos of a Christmas party at Dimebag's house in the 90s, and I think it was Jerry Cantrell, like, showing up with an ounce of cocaine. Like,
sick.
It's all these, like, you know, very Dallas 90s people, everybody with their high-waisted jeans and big hair, all these, like, you know, cute Kodak snapshots, and then just Jerry Cantrell with a big baggie of coke.
I'll have to take some time and read Rex Brown's memoir about the band. I've kind of nonchalantly flipped through it once at Barnes & Noble, And on doing so, I found out that essentially, according to Rex Brown, the band as a glam band just heard Metallica and then said, oh, let's do that. And then they became the Pantera we knew. I'm interested to read it because I know there was a lot of discourse between Vinnie Paul and Phil Anselmo over a lot of the stuff being inaccurate and made up.
I bought the book at Half Price Books like a year ago. I still haven't cracked it. I should have done that. I should have prepared for this show. Well, I guess I wasn't really prepared for this one.
No, and how could you? Who knows? You know, it happened only a few days ago. But I wonder if there's some sort of I have no idea. I could read the book and find out. But I wonder if there's some sort of story that could highlight that, you know, Vinnie Paul had a problem of some sort.
Who knows, man?
Who knows?
He was a bigger dude, too, you know? And, you know, being a bigger dude in your 50s, like, that takes its toll.
So. Yeah, well, most dudes in their 50s are bigger. You know, I mean, you got guys who are just kind of fatten around, and they're fine. you know, I don't know what to say. You know, he wasn't the fattest dude, honestly. He really wasn't. He just kind of had an unfortunate, you know, face to neck situation. It kind of wasn't so bad.
Yeah, I mean, go to a pharmacy at 12 o'clock on a weekday and you'll see fatter.
Right.
Yeah, but those guys aren't like touring the world. They're you know, hanging out in their backyard having a beer.
Yeah, anyone can tell you based on Hollywood that fat plus cocaine is not a good equation.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, opiates and alcohol, also a poor combination that kills a fair amount of people.
I don't know. I'm sure all four things were the case.
Like 45 minutes into the show, Jordan, do you feel more vindicated in your decision to be straight edge?
Yes. I really feel that almost on a weekly basis, even just going out and having to deal with people on all sorts of substances, legal or not. It's just like, yeah, I'm good. I don't want any of this.
Because it's like, as someone who drinks, I just immediately want to question where you're coming from. I'm just like, why, man? What's wrong? Come on. Just have a beer. It's fine. It's great. You know, but you see shit like this on the daily, so.
Yeah, or you just go to one of those places where everyone else is drinking and you be sober for a time or two and you go, oh, so this is what I'm like.
The last time I went on like an extended break from drinking, I was forced to go to a dueling piano bar for someone's birthday. Have you guys ever been to one of those?
No, but I know what they are, and it sounds unpleasant.
I didn't make it 30 minutes before taking shots to like try to numb the pain.
Was it one of those ones where like people dress up for it too?
I mean, so there's this fucking, and it's a chain, it's called like Pete's Dueling Piano Bar. It's in the tourist center of every shitty fucking city in the nation. There's one on 6th Street, and it's nothing but like extremely wasted middle-aged women. You've got two piano players and like they play for tips, so they're like competing with each other to, you know, play songs that you want to hear. I remember like,
oh god,
yeah, they generated like $300 for them to play CeeLo Green's Fuck You, which was popular at the time.
Yeah,
it was like, who wants to hear Fuck You? And it's like, woo, I'm like, I would rather fucking die.
Here's fuck 20 bucks indeed to play Chopsticks for an hour.
Have you heard this one? Have you heard from Billy Joel? Do you want to try that one?
Jesus. And by the time they started playing Don't Stop Believing, like, I had to have a drink. And I realized at that moment I was dependent on alcohol, but if I could make it through this moment, it was okay.
Yeah, that's the thing too, is that you know, when I went to shows and I went to parties and I just went to places with a lot of people, I would find myself drinking to kind of deal with it and to break out of my shell and relax a little bit, because I just think social places with lots of people all around me just kind of makes me generally uncomfortable. So that's also a bad combination if you don't kind of listen to yourself and who you are and what your abilities really are as on a social context. And so you just chug drinks to make it okay. Yeah, that's that. I would call that a dependency.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it is that all adult culture is pretty much formulated around alcohol. If anywhere you go out, anything you do, there is the option of drinking there, you know? If I want to go see a movie, which, you know, We've got Draft House movie theaters here. I don't know about you fellas, but
no, not at all.
Oh, okay.
Well, we have. I think it's Regal Cinemas have bars in them. Like one by me has a bar, like with mixed drinks and the whole deal.
Ugh, that's a bad combo, man. I want people to shut up during the movies.
I used that's to
the exact opposite of that.
I used to live above this fantastic art house theater. It was great because you know you could pay $5 and see all kind of weird shit. And that really opened up my culture in a lot of ways, but also great because you know you could just you know mix up a cocktail and take it downstairs with you into the theater.
But it's so interesting you say that alcohol is so ingrained in our culture. Every time we celebrate, every time we, you know, I mean, think of a wedding for Christ's sakes. Have you ever seen anyone come out of a wedding just not smashed off their ass?
Well,
besides someone like
maybe. Just me.
My sister, her wedding was dry because, you know, religion.
I think that's funny because even in they drink wine in some religions for certain.
Yeah, I mean, certain sects of Christianity are much more drunk than others. Baptist weddings, no fun, man. No fun at all.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But anyway, I forgot where I was going with this. I think if you were to like stop drinking entirely right now, it would be incredibly disconcerting to try to go out and enjoy the things that you used to enjoy. Because everything is given the presumption that you're going to be drinking with it. Going to a show, got to have some drinks. You know, going to, I don't know, the fucking theater? Is that a thing?
picking your kids up from daycare.
Picking your kids up from daycare. You know, going to the hospital. Going to, I don't know what people do, man. I don't go a whole lot other than, like, going to concerts.
Probably the most drunk I've ever been in my life was just like company run outings where my company like takes me out bowling or something or takes me to like a they have like I don't know a picnic or something and they just fill us with totally free booze. It's just like and all the you know you're matching drinks with all the other guys. It's what everyone's doing. But then at the end of it, I'm just like, holy shit, I'm right next to my boss here, and I've never been more plastered in my life.
I don't go to those things anymore.
Good idea.
I used to a lot, and it was a similar deal. I had multiple nights where I slept under my desk. Like, just it was too smashed to even like try to consider getting home.
Yeah.
And then suffering through the entire next day. I can't keep up anymore. I don't have any interest in doing that. I want to go home and I want to hang out with my animals and my lady and have three beers and call it a night.
Yeah, I think three is my outside of a home maximum. So anyway, listen to the band Tankard. They're great.
Are they still all alive?
Can't possibly. I can't assume anything, but I know they're still active, aren't they?
I think so. I think they do like MDF sometimes. Tankard.
There's this whole like sub genre of just metal bands that do songs about beer. It's kind of odd, isn't it? When you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, you've got your. You had Municipal Waste, of course, with all the. You know, like beer pressure tracks like that, and then there's Gangrene, like you mentioned, and then there's like a new one recently came out. Have you seen this? Have you heard about this? Trappist.
Yeah. On Relapse, right?
On Relapse Records. Let's see. Their latest record is called Ancient Brewing Tactics. I gotta say the artwork on this is actually very cool. Like it's a bunch of monks like with cauldrons of beer. Let's see track one on this No Soldier Left Behind. Reference of course to Don't Leave Halfway Drunk Beers in My House. Let's see. There's also Giving the Boot to Reinheitsgebot. That was the German law requiring that your beer must be only made with three ingredients, hops, water, and The other one was alcohol, I think. No, I think when yeast came around, they changed it where it could be four ingredients.
Barley?
I'm sure somebody else could come up with this. They've got no corporate beer, which I don't wholly agree with. 99 problems, but a beer ain't one. Incredibly clever, fellas.
Break up.
Yeah.
Stupid.
To the pint. And actually, I think this one is actually incredibly clever. Wolves in the tap room. Gotcha.
Everyone should be delighted to know that Tankard is still very much active.
Yes.
In fact, their latest album was released in 2017.
Those dudes have 4,000 records.
1 foot in the grave. Oh, and it's that same goblin with beer in his cart. That's great.
Well, they had some of the worst album art of all time with A Girl Called Cerveza. Look that up.
Girl Called Cerveza. I'm going to do that right now.
I want to see what the image for our show will be this week.
I love it.
Oh, my God. Yep. That's a German woman.
did you see when she was born?
No. What does it say?
6/6/66.
Got it.
That's one more six, you drunk German douchebags.
But yeah, I mean,
there's also like pot related bands that like just do all about that, like Bongzilla.
So like Trappist is the hardcore version of Cannabis Corpse.
Yeah.
I was joking with you that it would be funny, like, if a band, like, instead of doing, you know, safe, totally like accepted, you know, drugs like alcohol and weed, somebody just did one for cocaine. I think that would be cool as hell. And then I see that from the band Trappist, it includes Phil Vera, who used to be in Crom, who put out a record called The Cocaine Wars.
Man, fuck that. I think they should start a band for people with weird addictions. Like there's a group of people that have a very hard time where they just have to chew on ice all the time.
Oh yeah, I've heard that it could be an iron deficiency.
Ice Crunchers.
Yeah, Ice Cruncher is a pretty cool band name.
Yeah, I'd go see Ice Cruncher.
Ice Crunchers.
What other addictions can you think of? Like how about Jankum?
Sniffing gasoline.
Yeah. Porn. Wait, what do you say?
Porn.
Oh, I mean, there's an entire genre around that. It's pornogrind.
Yeah.
Well, James Hetfield narrated a documentary about porn addiction. I think it's on Netflix.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you guys want to watch that for the next episode?
I think so, yeah. James Hetfield. Crap. Porn addiction.
Uh-oh.
James Hetfield porn.
Try that at work, kids.
Yeah!
Yay!
Open your mouth.
Oh, great. It's a Loudwire article, because of course it fucking is.
Go off. Tell me about Loudwire.
Well, they're one of the many music metal-ish related websites, although they're free to like post about Foo Fighters and other sort of non-metal related items. And just recently, especially on like Twitter, they've been posting just awful, awful memes, like the Lisa getting coffee picture that people have been using, Lisa Simpson.
Yeah.
And yeah, that one. And it's just like when you need 2000s rock music, and it's like a picture of like Blink-182's album and like My Chemical Romance and Green Day. It's just like, stop. What are you doing?
Who does this, like, if you have a quote unquote metal audience, who does this appeal to?
Old metalheads that secretly like American Idiot.
Man, I was the perfect demographic for American Idiot when it came out. Even now, I was like, this is fucking lame.
Right. It's like I'm a teenager who's politically aware, and you guys missed me.
Yes,
by a mile.
So incredibly backwards. I saw something else that they posted the other day. Like, let me see if I can find it. It was dumb.
I'm trying to find it right now. I think I know what you're talking about. Like, what kind of metal fan are you? And yeah. It looked like it was made by like a 46-year-old Brazilian man who just like is trying his best at this meme thing.
Yeah, yeah. So they had eight different options here for what kind of metalhead are you? Are you a classic metalhead? Do you like Black Sabbath, Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, or Dio? Acceptable, okay. Are you a thrash metalhead? Do you like Metallica, Slayer, Megadeth, and Anthrax? I have no idea how they could pair those four bands together. I would have never thought of that, but yeah.
It gets worse.
Death metal fan. Cannibal Corpse, Death, Morbid Angel. Sure. New metal fan. Korn, Limp Bizkit, Deftones, and Papa Roach. Actually, props for calling Deftones what they are, which is a new metal band. Always have been, always will be.
Always have been, always will be. Everyone who says otherwise is full of all the shit.
Mm-hmm. Or a speed metal fan. Motorhead, Venom, Anvil, and Accept. I don't know that that is necessarily speed metal, but we'll move on. Mellowdeath, At the Gates, In Flames, Dark Tranquility, and Carcass. I guess if you were to consider that one Carcass record only, that would be a Mellowdeath fan. Prog metal, Queensryche, Meshuggah, Dream Theater, and Opeth. Is Meshuggah prog metal in any way?
No.
If you count one riff for 10 minutes, prog metal.
Deathcore, Whitechapel, Thy Art Is Murder, and Carnifex.
Fine.
I guess, sure. Metalcore, Killswitch Engage, Trivium, Converge, and Underoath.
And here's the kicker. Here was my favorite section.
Before we go there, is Underoath, could that in any way be considered metalcore?
Yeah, I think that's fine. Converge is more of the one that I was just like, what? Really?
Well, it's interesting. It depends. If you ask two totally definition. Different guys. Yeah. You ask two totally different guys what metalcore is. One will tell you it's three of those bands, and then the other will tell you, no, it's only Converge and bands like Converge.
I mean, more accurately, if you ask two guys, they're both going to be like, what, is that screamy shit?
Yeah. Oh, that's Screamo.
That's Screamo, yeah. modern metal. Are you a modern metalhead?
That's my favorite one. That's what I was getting to.
Do you like Slipknot or Avenged Sevenfold or Five Finger Death Punch?
Who fucking came up with this list? Like, who thought that those blonde together and that Slipknot was by or even Avenged Sevenfold was by any means modern? Those guys have Slipknot. What are we up to? 30 years now?
Slipknot formed in 1995.
Yeah, 25. Yeah, sorry.
Avenged Sevenfold formed in 1999. And Five Finger Death Punch, not metal. Sorry, fellas. Also, they formed in like 2004 or 2005, something like that. So,
the worst part about this is they don't have black metal on here, which is just so strange. Because how could you turn your back to so many racists that make up the genre?
Yeah, it's true. They're missing Doom. You know,
Doom is.
The thing is, they don't cover any of that, do they?
I don't know. I've never been probably to loudwire.com in my life. Why the fuck would I go to loudwire.com?
Because you need to know the fact or fiction of Vinnie Paul.
All right. Let's right. Take a look. Loudwire.com. You did it. Your fucking memes did it. all right. So trending up at the top, RIP Vinnie Paul, Vinnie Paul Moments. New Hailstorm song, Dave Shit. Grohl apologizes.
In general,
for every record after There Is Nothing Left, Black Veil Brides Future, and Loudwire Nights.
Yeah, they're just like fastball straight down the middle. Here is rock news.
Yeah, it's like what a cable company would think is metal music.
Or Revolver Magazine, it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's like if you need to find out the latest news on who Gene Simmons is feuding with.
Yeah. Okay. I actually looked up, I was curious, where does Loudwire come from? Who owns it? They're owned by something called Town Square Media, who is a radio, digital media, entertainment, and digital marketing solutions company that own a couple of radio stations, the Taste of Country Music Festival, Country Jam, the Boise Music Festival, Red Dirt Barbecue and Music Festival.
I'm noticing a pattern here.
And Taste of Fort Collins, and leading tastemaker of music and entertainment websites such as XXLMag.com, TasteOfCountry.com, and Loudwire.com.
XXSL is the only thing that doesn't fit here, because that's all like rap.
Yeah,
so that's strange.
It's something that they can make money off of.
I guess
isn't that like specifically the Maxim, but for like big booties?
No, I think that's FHM.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I couldn't help myself. I clicked on it. I clicked on the fucking Dave Grohl apologizes thing.
What did Dave Grohl do?
I just hate this fucker so much. Okay, I'm going to read
He's fine.
He's given the best of himself to you.
Yeah, here we go. Here, let's read this thing. Chad Childers wrote this. Fucking Chad Childers. Get the fuck out of here. Okay, Foo Fighters made their return to the Late Late Show with James Corden stage last night, performing a classic song, Best of You, for the audience as Corden took his show back to London this week. The band was already in town for the Kerrang Awards, which they won a pair of honors. Of course they fucking did. However, the performance came about after a bit of awkwardness. Members of the Foo Fighters complained about their experiences doing a segment of Corden's Carpool Karaoke in an interview last October with NME. Grohl remarked that it was a little uncomfortable doing the segment, while Pat Smear stated, by hour three in Dude's car, it got less fun. This week it was reported that those comments were noticed by Corden, who sent Grohl a message asking, "What the fuck, dude?" "I was like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god," Grohl told The Sun. "I had to text him back. I was like, no, dude, that's not what we meant. We were trying to say it was uncomfortable to sit in a car and try to sing our own songs. If we were singing Queen songs or Led Zeppelin songs or Beatles songs, it would have been fine. But to sit there and sing your own songs, we felt weird about it." Grohl continued, "I don't drive around Los Angeles listening to singing my own songs. So when we said it was an uncomfortable experience, I felt so bad when it came out in the press. Foo Fighters had a terrible time. They hated the whole fucking thing. We didn't. He's such a sweet guy."
This is the most unnecessary article that has ever existed.
I'm sure it gets more views than most of our things that we write that are heartfelt and well-researched and, you know, well-written.
Well, 1,000%. Also, isn't Dave Grohl the famous guy for, like, saying, "What happened to all the rock stars? There's nothing more rock star than fucking ass-kissing the bitch fucking late-night TV show guy for saying, I didn't have a good time filming for 3 hours in your fucking car." Ah! Hate him. Anyway, we should probably wrap this one up. We're over time now.
Everyone in Loudwire starts doing more drugs, so they start writing better stuff.
That's how it works. That is always how it works. Using drugs makes you more creative and better at your art.
Isn't it?
Pretty sure.
Don't we have the 70s to look back on?
Yeah. That all went great for everybody.
Yeah.
How about
you? Who needs to be 28, you know?
fair point. Jordan, you got anything else to put on this one?
Follow us on Twitter at Toilet of Hell, at Joe Thrash and Kill, at 365 Days of Heart, at That's Not Metal. Be sure to like us on Facebook. You can always send us an email, toiletofhellradio@gmail.com.
Yeah, also subscribe to us on Patreon if you want bonus episodes. For one of these upcoming episodes, maybe a Patreon, maybe a normal, we're definitely going to watch the James Hetfield porno documentary.
Sick.
Pornhub.
All right. That's it for me. See you next week.
Ooh. Yeah.
Bye. I'm
listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.